I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
Peace and welcome to For the Culture right here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening. Tonight, folks, we got a great show for you. We're going to talk about President Trump and his whole idea of being acquitted and the ramifications of that. We're going to talk a little bit about bipartisanship. And is this a new American presidency that we're looking at? We'll have that conversation. Also, we'll have a very special guest joining us. We have the Inspector General for the City of Baltimore, Ms. Isabel Mercedes Cummings, that's going to be joining us to talk about her work of ridding city government of waste and fraud. And later, Woundwork Productions. Stay riding with me. It's For the Culture on WEAA.
I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
Welcome to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening, folks. It is that day, that favorite time of the week. Dre Day, tell them what day it is.
Hello, Friday. I've been waiting for you for a long time. You just say crumbling down, and I know you're gonna leave me. Hello, Friday. I've been waiting for you for a long time.
3, 2.
Just got paid. I done had a hard week. Now it's time to celebrate.
Woo!
Hello, Friday. Yes, yes, yes. It's a windy, blustery Friday. Yes, folks. If you're out and about in the great city of Baltimore, you're probably not hearing me because of the wind. Get into your car before you blow away. Folks, I'm telling you, it's cold out there. How does the weather get from like 55, 60 degrees and it just drops down to 40? Welcome to the winter in Baltimore City. Yes, folks, we got a great show for you tonight. We're going to kick off the conversation, talking a little bit about President Trump, because we got to talk about President Trump. Not going to put too much into it, but I think that what we've been seeing over the past 48 hours, really the past 24 hours, is an indication of something much bigger. So I want to talk to us a little bit about this. Really, the question being, is this the beginning of the end of bipartisanship? We'll have that conversation for a little bit. And then I have my very special guest that will be joining us live in studio. She serves as Baltimore's Inspector General. You might be asking yourself, what is that? Who is she and what do they do? Well, we'll ask those questions. And trust me, folks, you don't want to miss out on that conversation. And then later, we'll be talking to the wonderful, wonderful performers and students of Woundwork Productions. They're going to give us a little performance tonight, just a little something-something, as they talk about their upcoming production. Folks, we got a lot to get to. All right, let's first start off talking about President Trump, because he gave his acquittal statement. And the acquittal statement that he gave was something that I have personally never seen from a president before. Generally, when you have someone that has gotten into some of the controversy and hot water that President Trump has found himself in, that their statement is really like, whew, more of acknowledgement of just kind of being grateful that they've been able to get through it. Not President Trump. Not President Trump. He took the statement to a whole nother level. I want to share with you just some of the excerpts from what the president had to say yesterday as it relates to the Senate decision to acquit the president of those two articles of impeachment, one being obstruction of justice and abuse of power. I want to talk, just kind of share with you what the president had to say. Mr. President, what are your words?
But what we can do is incredible. What we can do just generally. We've done so much without it. We've rebuilt our military. We've cut regulations at a level that nobody thought possible. We'll always protect our Second Amendment. We all know that. But I just want to tell you that it's an honor to be with you all. I want to apologize to my family for having them have to go through a phony, rotten deal by some very evil and sick people. And Ivanka's here, and my sons and my whole family. And that includes Barron. That includes Barron, who's up there as a young boy. Stand up, honey. Ivanka, thank you, honey. Come. So I just want to thank my family for sticking through it. This was not part of the deal. I was going to run for president, and if I won, I was going to do a great job. I didn't know that I was going to run, and then when I got in, I was going to have to run again and again and again. Every week, I had to run again. That wasn't the deal, but they stuck with me. And I'm so glad I did it, because we are making progress and doing things for our great people that everybody said couldn't be done. Our country is thriving. Our country is just respected again. And it's an honor to be with the people in this room. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
So it was just some of the, that was just some of the beginning words of the president's remark. It sounds pretty simple, right? Pretty civilized. But then his statement just took a whole another turn, folks. Let me just say that. It went into a space where the best way to describe it is like, it was like if he was a battle rapper. If he was a battle rapper, this would be his diss song right here. I want to share with more of what the president had to say. Check this out.
Weeks ago and again yesterday, courageous Republican politicians and leaders had the wisdom, fortitude, and strength to do what everyone knows was right. I don't like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong. Nor do I like people who say, "I pray for you," when they know that that's not so. So many people have been hurt, and we can't let that go on.
That was President Trump as he started to address the annual prayer breakfast that is held in Washington, D.C. every year. And at this prayer breakfast, he came out boasting, showing that he was victorious, holding up papers that said Trump acquitted, various publications, including the Washington Post. And at this prayer breakfast, he also made the point that while he was just standing just a few feet away from Nancy Pelosi and a few yards away from Republican Senator Mitt Romney, who was in the room, he just made the point that these were evil people. He made the point that these were people who preyed on his downfall. Very, very harsh words about his enemies. Now, I want to play a clip of what, as we've been seeing this whole thing kind of just shaping out, I want to play this clip because if you remember, when President Clinton was impeached and then he ended up being acquitted, just like President Trump, there's a very different tone that President Clinton took versus what we heard from President Trump yesterday. Check this out.
Now that the Senate has fulfilled its constitutional responsibility,
we have something that just worked out. I mean, it worked out. We went through hell.
I want to say again to the American people how profoundly sorry I am.
Did nothing wrong. Did nothing wrong.
For what I said and did.
It was all bullshit.
I also am humbled.
A lot of wives wouldn't give a damn.
And very grateful.
And I say, those ears have something going on there.
For the support.
Boom, boom, boom.
And the prayers I have received from millions of Americans.
This is what the end result is.
This can be, and this must be, a time of reconciliation.
Nancy Pelosi is a horrible person.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
The difference of one president versus another. Now, this is not a conversation about Democrats versus Republicans. It's just a conversation about a person who realized that they did something wrong and they were actually, they're trying to, it's like, okay, fine. You thought I did something wrong. The evidence showed or the decision was made that I didn't do anything wrong. Therefore, I should be good. Two different tones, two different presidents, same issue of being acquitted. I'm going to open up the phone lines very quickly for you to give a chime in. 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. You remember, now, Mr. President, President Trump talked about the fact that he went through hell. He often described Democrats as being evil, dirty people throughout his remarks yesterday. He really went at his own party member, Mitt Romney, as to go as far to say that he was sorry about Mitt Romney. And he said to the state of Utah, I'm sorry about Mitt Romney. Yeah. Yeah. He even has gone after publications. I mean, this was far beyond just an acquittal statement. This was like a victory lap. He himself has said when he first started his remarks that this was not a press conference, that he didn't have a statement. This was a celebration. My question is, what we're looking at, and I posted this on my Facebook page, folks, I don't think that this is not anything normal. I said, it's unprecedented, actually, that we're seeing a president who have decided to take such a tone, such an attitude about something that is so serious. And the concern that I currently have is about the fact that as much as I just played those brief excerpts from President Clinton about partisanship, bringing people together, reconciliation. President Trump didn't have the same tone. President Trump decided that he wanted to play off of the divisiveness of his language, of his actions. He wanted to play party politics to the fullest extent. And he did that in a big national primetime conversation, however you want to call it. He did it in a very, very big way. Which leaves me to ask the question, then what is going to be the future of this quote-unquote democracy that we're seeing? I think there is a new American presidency that's being established right now, folks. I may be wrong, but this is not normal. The other thing I want us to keep in mind is that there are so many times when President Trump speaks that we say things like, oh, I don't listen to him. Oh, I just kind of tune him out. I don't think we should do that. I don't think we should do that, folks. And here's why. President Trump is a man of great power, great resources, and a lot of influence. And he's also the commander-in-chief. He's also the president of the United States of America. So we can't just act as if this is, he'll kind of go away. There is the very real possibility, and I'm not trying to fear-monger anything, but there is the very real possibility that the president can be reelected. Very real possibility. Let me hear your thoughts about this. 410-319-8888. Let me hear from Patricia out of Whitehall. Patricia, thank you so much for checking in, ma'am. What's your take?
What's my take?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I am a Democrat, but I did vote for President Trump. And I can also tell you, after that speech yesterday, I am incredibly disappointed in him for not bringing the parties, plural, back together. And number two, I'm equally disappointed with Pelosi and her little guru of group for the same type of issue.
Yeah.
I simply cannot comprehend where their heads are. I am blown away by the fact that both of these people can have such hatred of one another. It continues to spill over into all avenues of our government.
Yeah.
And whether you believe in what President Trump stands for or not, you know, at this point, it really doesn't, it's a moot point, because we can't even get on the same page of coming together and say, yes, we have differences, let's move on and let's do a better job.
Yeah.
I whether or not I vote for him again, who knows? But I am incredibly disappointed in the outcome of the speech from yesterday. I believe he should have been acquitted. However, I believe he should have been the bigger person to bring the group together and not
right.
do what he did. It was unbecoming. It was more unbecoming than Pelosi ripping up the speech.
Right, yeah.
That was a tit for tat. But being the president of the United States, it deserves better behavior, and being a leader is more than what he did.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
my take.
No, Patricia, that's a,
was poor.
I appreciate you for checking in, and I agree with you on that. I think it's across the board. That, and I'm so happy that you were able to, you know, you shared that, because I think that is the part about it. This is the stuff that keeps people from going to the ballot. This is the stuff that keeps people in a divided state, right? And as much as there is the rhetoric, and I'm going to just say it just like this, folks, it's rhetoric. It's empty speech. If you look at the origin of rhetoric, empty speech, it's empty. It doesn't mean anything. It just sounds good, but it doesn't have any real substance. The rhetoric of unity in this country, the rhetoric. And I think it's going down, it's taking us in a very dangerous path. When the president makes mockery, when the House Speaker does the things that we see that's happening, I mean, this back and forth, neither party have clean hands here, folks. Neither party. I don't care if you say, oh, Republicans do this, Democrats do that. Neither party have clean hands. And guess who's left being all dirty? Us as the constituents. Let's go back to the phone line and hear what you got to say. Linda out of Glen Oak. Ms. Linda, talk to me. What's your take?
All right. Good evening and God bless to you, my brother.
God bless you too, Ms. Linda.
And all of you who are out there that have an ear to hear, Donald Trump is going from being acquitted to committed. Because, baby, it is not over. It's just beginning. Because God... Honey, everything, every wicked thing about Donald Trump, there's nothing decent about him. It's all about Donald Trump. He thinks he's above the law. He thinks he's God, that he's untouchable. But, baby, there's somebody who set high and looked low, who is always in control. And God is getting ready to bust some moves, baby, and those sentences, those people who knew that this man was guilty of everything that he was accused of, that did not do what they should have done, they have to give an account to God also. But baby, it is not over. It's just beginning. Like I said, get your large quantity of your favorite snacks and your drinks, because baby, lights, camera, action.
There it is.
The stage is set and the curtain is gone up.
Thank you so much, Ms. Linda.
Showtime.
You're right.
God bless
you, too. Thank you so much for checking in. Let me just share something with you. Senator Marco Rubio out of Florida, he said that in announcing his decision to acquit, he was more concerned about the impact of the impeachment proceedings' partisanship on the country's future than in leaving Donald Trump in office, even if he had sought foreign interference in the 2020 election, as the Democrats claimed. This is a quote directly from Mr. Rubio. The Time used. He said, quote, just because actions meet a standard of impeachment does not mean it is in the best interest of the country to remove a president from office. Can anyone doubt that at least half of the country would view his removal as illegitimate, as nothing short of a coup d'etat? It is difficult to conceive of any scheme Putin, the Russian president, could undertake that would undermine confidence in our democracy more than removal would. Mm. This is what Marco Rubio's expressing is essentially what the Republicans, why they decided not to acquit. Because they're saying it may be good for the Democrats, it may be good for some Republicans. But in the interest of where this country is, based upon the divisiveness of this country, it may not be so good. Let me hear from Father John out of Baltimore. Father John, thank you so much for checking in, sir. What's your take? And I'm so happy to have a father, a spiritual figure, to talk to us about this, because I think that what we're seeing requires not just citizens, but also our religious leaders to be a part of this, because we need to have some clarity, Father.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak and comment on this such adverse reaction in regards to this current administration. But my main concern is it's not the man who's in the position. My main concern is the fact that we don't vote.
Hmm.
We don't vote as a people. We don't vote as a bloc. And when we do vote, we continuously vote for the same people over and over again. It's a crying shame that this past election, for congressmen, that 18% of the citizens of Baltimore City voted and the rest did not.
Mm.
And until we come to terms with our role in this country, that people have fought and died in order to vote, until we come to the realization that a hopeless people is a voteless people, we need to get out and register,
mm-hmm.
and we need to get out and vote. Because the only way we're going to get him out of office is if we step up and do the right thing. And that's my comment. Thank you, my brother.
Hey, thank you so much, Father. I appreciate you so much. Let me hear from another voice we haven't heard from, LaTanya out of Baltimore. To LaTanya, talk to me. What's your take, ma'am?
Hey, Verfrazzi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. That speech, you know, let me say this. Let me back up. Like you said, for those who compare ourselves out and say, oh, I'm not going to listen to him, like you said, yeah, we need to jump in and listen to Trump to see what he has to say. But listen to the speech he had compared to Bill Clinton. You know what? This, to me, the lack of education. Did I expect him to say what he said? Of course. You know, but again, was Nancy Pelosi, you know, we're looked at the whole. We're looked at kind of like a laughing stock.
Mm.
We can't even get it together.
Mm. And do you think that we have, as constituents, that we have the power to change this dynamic right now, or is this just at the leadership level? Because I feel like both sides. I mean, like maybe it's just because on this platform, but I think all of us are at this point. We're actually asking. Do we need to really finish this two-party system? Like, is this really the best, is in the best interest of the country? Do you think that we're at that point right now, LaTanya?
I really think we're at that point.
Yeah.
It's like we saw the separation with the Bush administration.
Hmm.
We saw the separation, but did we really feel the separation?
Hmm.
No, we didn't really feel it, but we saw it. But we kept pressing on. With this, with this Trump administration, you see it, you feel it. Anytime you're targeting children and you're talking, we adults and we're calling children N-words, you know.
Right.
Not that they haven't been called that, but we're talking this day and age.
Right.
Really? Yeah, we I don't know, Faraj.
I know. I hear you. I hear the frustration and pain in your voice, LaTanya. I appreciate
you.
For...
And like the last caller said, yes, ma'am, before we go, we got to exercise our rights. We got to exercise it. We got to get out there in numbers.
You're right. LaTanya, thank you so much for checking in. We appreciate it. Folks, we're going to have put a pause on that conversation. And I really want us to do our due diligence, to really think about this, to be critical in our thinking about it, to understand it, to get out of just being emotional about it and really reflect. I mean, whether you go to your scriptures, whether you go to some wise words, figuring out what is the thing that we're looking at, you know, to give a better sense of the context. That's the best way I can say for right now, because I feel like something else is going to be dropping, not necessarily political news, but we are in a changed moment right now. This is, unfortunately, the new American democracy. All right, folks, I got to take my a quick pause. When we come back, my one-on-one conversation with Baltimore City's Inspector General. Stay riding with me. It's For the Culture here on WEAA.
This for my culture, 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 culture.
So welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me. Folks, I am very excited about my very special guest right now. She's joining us live in the studio, and she does a very, very powerful work here in the city of Baltimore. And you may not even know that this role actually exists. But she's been doing this work for a very long time on many capacities, going after the bad guys. That says that's what gets her juices flowing. But she's doing it in a very, very big way. And so we're happy to have her on the airwaves of WEAA and 88.9 to give us some insight about her latest role as Inspector General. We want to welcome to For the Culture, Miss Isabel Mercedes Cumming. Miss Isabel, good evening and welcome to For the Culture. How are you?
I'm good, and I want to thank you very much. I'm honored to even be here.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, we're honored to have you. One of the big things that I think that is important for this particular platform is for us as citizens of this city to know who are the movers, the shakers, the decision makers, and really know what their government is about. You've been a prosecutor. You've been going after dealing with fraud cases for many, many years. But more importantly, I think you are kind of fueled by something else. First and foremost, you are the Inspector General. You've been doing this work for a while, not as the Inspector General, but just in this work of going after these cases. What does fuel Isabel Mercedes Cumming? What gets you up in the morning about your work?
Well, I love my job. I love Baltimore. I mean, if you ever looked at my Instagram, I post pictures of Baltimore every day because I think I love everything about it. I've been working in Baltimore since 1984, and I just don't like when people take advantage of anything. I try to go for transparency, accountability. I don't like when people get ripped off. I don't like when people are bullies. I've always been trying to fight for, because, I mean, you know, I was not... I was certainly never a big wig. My mom and dad just worked real hard in life. I wasn't anybody's, you know. So I paid for my own schooling. I went to the University of Baltimore at night. I worked full time. So I just think, you know, I'm called the people's watchdog, and I take that really seriously because I work for the people. My job is the people's office.
The people's office. So let's get into the role of your job. What is the role of the Inspector General in the office of the Inspector General?
Okay, the Inspector General looks out for financial waste, fraud, and abuse that happens in city government.
Uh-oh.
And
Uh-oh.
So, I know. And we have a hotline, and we take calls from the people, and I know the people... back in 2018 made my office independent. Because believe it or not, the Inspector General has been around since 2005. I'm actually right. the fifth Inspector General. Can you name any of the others?
I did have them in my head, Mrs. Zubel. But you know what? It was established under Mayor Martin O'Malley.
That's right.
And but the history is you are the first woman Inspector General for the city of Baltimore.
More importantly, I'm the first independent Inspector General.
That is. You know how she does.
Well, okay. That's what makes all the difference because I don't work for the mayor. I work for the people. I mean, our hotline, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, unlike other. When you call the hotline, you're going to get someone calling you back within 72 hours. Someone will call you back if you leave your name and number. I mean, that doesn't happen in a lot of places. And if we can't help you, we'll tell you where to go. You know, because we might not have the jurisdiction to look into something. I don't have the jurisdiction to look into, like, Baltimore County, Anne Arundel. But if it's something in Baltimore and we can look into it or help you or point you in the direction, we'll do it.
So when you talk about financial waste and fraud, what does that mean exactly? What type of, you know, give us an idea of that. Because with many people, you know, in Baltimore, when decisions are made, especially about the budget,
right.
some people would say, oh, that was a waste of money.
Yep.
So how do you look at that?
I look at existing situations, and, like, people will call me, like, Miss Isabel, you know, the rest of Baltimore City, we get our trash picked up once a week, but there's an area that's getting their trash picked up twice a week. So I will look in and say, why? So that just happened, you know. We found out that Cross Keys was getting trash picked up twice a week, the rest of us once a week. So that was corrected. Another time someone calls up and says, Isabel, they're paying someone who on Baltimore salary that happens to be living in Ireland. Nah. Sure enough, true. They're not. They don't work for Baltimore City anymore. Another time someone says, they are wasting our retirement money on fixing up an office. So they call up, we do an investigation. Sure enough, that was true. Another time, a chief investment officer who's looking over our money, turns out he wasn't even living in Baltimore. He was actually living in Florida. He was only coming in 60% of the time. So anytime someone is wasting our money, then that's when I get phone calls and we'll do an investigation.
So does your office, and this is good to know, does your office deal just with low-level employees or does that go all the way up to the top?
It can be anybody. I do not discriminate.
From top to bottom.
Yeah. I mean, anybody that's wasting our money, I mean, I pay taxes, you pay taxes.
Right.
It's our money. So I want to make sure if there's a fraud situation going on or someone is not doing what they're supposed to be doing and it's the type of thing that we look at, then that's what we do.
So let's go back to that point that you said about being the first independent inspector general, because that was a major move. Councilman Ryan Dorsey had introduced a piece of legislation saying that the inspector general needed to be independent because it was under the mayor's office. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so he made that decision made that decision to provide some autonomy to your office. So now where does the office of in the inspector general, where does that fit in the city structure? Given that change?
Well, now I am an independent entity, even though I'm located in City Hall. I'm up on the sixth floor of City Hall, but I don't report to, like, for instance, my reports, they ended up going to the people. I let the people know. We just had a report that came out this week. It says to the citizens of Baltimore. So, because I feel strongly that the people of Baltimore, by 84% of the vote, made my office independent. So they want me to be independent. So the only time I have to, I ask for money and I get my budget approved because there is, of course, I mean, you can't let me or any inspector general just run wild. We all have to be accountable. So I am accountable to a committee that meets to review my budget and to make sure that I haven't done anything wrong. Because if there's like an accusation of misconduct by me, then they would look into that.
And who sits on the committee?
That's the interesting thing. Sitting on the committee is the people or the designees of the mayor, the comptroller, the city council president, the city solicitor, and the two deans of the law schools, University of Baltimore, University of Maryland.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So this panel, this committee dictate your job.
They don't dictate my job. I don't report to them. I only have to they leave me alone to do my job. They would only convene to either approve my budget or if I was accused of misconduct.
Sure.
But other than that, I don't tell anybody what we're investigating. Like when the press calls me about anything, I will almost always say we neither confirm nor deny I'm doing an investigation. Because even knowing that you're under the OIG's purview, that can be negative. And people's reputation is very important. So I don't let anybody know who we're investigating till it's all over.
Wow. Wow. Folks, if you're just tuning in to For the Culture here on WEAA, we are talking to Baltimore's Inspector General, Ms. Isabel Mercedes Cumming. We want you to join us in this conversation. She talks about how she deals with the issue of financial waste and fraud, and she wants to hear from you to pose your questions. But we, more importantly, this is an independent entity that works for the people of Baltimore in Baltimore City. Did you know this office existed? I'm telling you, when I found out this office existed, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be fun. Yeah. 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. So, Ms. Isabel, when you're saying that you do your job, first and foremost, you do have a term for your role.
6 years.
6 years.
6 years.
So did your term start in 2018 or when did you just...
My term started when the vote happened, so that was... That was December 5th, 2018. So 2000. I have about, you're stuck with me for about four years and 10 months left.
And so are there term limits for this role?
No, there's no term. But I'm not that young. I mean, I don't think I can do this. This is a pretty tough job. I mean, I think. I do believe in term limits if you want to talk about that. So yeah, the most I would ever do is two, and that's it.
Then
Isabel Mercedes goes to retirement.
She's done. But when your term is over, does your name come up on a ballot? For like, how does that fit with the other terms for the other local leaders?
No, because I'm not elected.
Oh, okay.
I'm not an elected official.
Gotcha.
They do a vetting system by the solicitor, and that's the way it happened originally. I would presume when my term is up that's what would happen, but that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
And the solicitor, for those who don't know, is the city's lawyer.
That's right. That's Andre Davis.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
He's a very impressive person. I feel very privileged to work under him.
Fantastic. You know, fantastic.
Good man. And just so you know, because getting our word out was so important, what I do is I talk to all new employees in Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
We have LinkedIn, we have Facebook, because if the people don't know about us, what good are we? So to me, getting the word out and letting people know, doing what, that's why I'm so grateful you're having me on here. You know, let everybody know the OIG, Baltimore OIG, just look it up. You can give us a complaint online. You can call us up. There's lots of different ways to let us know what's happening.
So, the big thing I think the city is still reeling from, one of the big cases was former Mayor Catherine Pugh.
Mm-hmm.
How do we as a city, from your vantage point as the Inspector General, how do we kind of move through the residual effects of that, especially going into a new mayoral election? We're going to an election with new leadership. Because one of the things I read about you is that you want to help to restore the trust of the people back into their government. So how is that done?
Well, it's done by transparency is a really important thing. Transparency and accountability. I mean, a lot of things seem to be done, and everybody will tell me, oh, we've done it that way a long time, Isabel. And I'll say, why? And they can't give me an answer. So then I say, do you really think that's the best way to do it? I think finding transparency and accountability and people knowing that if you report it to us, either we will try our best to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it's not something I investigate, but for instance, another agency does, I will send the letter on behalf of the person and say, here's a situation. I would like the response back in 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I feel that people do know the Inspector General exists, so people will respond to me quicker. And if I can help people with their situations, we will.
But, you know, transparency and accountability is almost, unfortunately, is like relative, depending on who you talk to.
I know.
So, do you, you know, is there something that the city council or the mayor's office would need to do, you know, to make sure that that transparency and accountability is happening? Should there be some monthly communication, some reporting that's done? You know, how do we help to make sure that that your vision of transparency and accountability is the same vision as the city council's, at the mayor's office, the police departments, the fire department?
What I mean, you asked me what I thought for the people that
sure.
But for me,
yes,
what's
ma'am.
Most important to me is to get my reports out and to make sure that people know what we're doing.
Okay.
So, and in that regard, my reports are public. I mean, as soon as I can make something public, I make it public. And that's a big change. And people are very surprised by our reports. And I try to make them as detailed as possible because, you know, a lot of work goes into these. And we need to see how we can make it better. Like we did a big report. I think it was almost 30 pages on the Department of Public Works and the different ways that were happening. And one of the things that is in the report, a lot of got focused on task work because that's a big issue, how they do the work. But another big issue that I thought should have been reported more was the fact that some of the DPW people didn't have proper water, they didn't have proper urinals, they didn't have things weren't fixed up.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of my report, that all became fixed for those people. And I mean, and they told us that they had been complaining quite a while.
In your reports, do you recommend arrest? Do you recommend termination?
In my reports, I just lay out the facts.
Gotcha.
I feel that I'm the investigator. That's management. However, if it's a case that could involve a criminal prosecution or stuff, we would take the case before it ever went public to the prosecutor. And we would be working like on parts of the Pew case, we were helping behind the scenes on that.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. You know, there were two raids in Baltimore City.
Mm.
One was against the former comptroller Jackie McLean, and then this one against Catherine Pugh. And I was actually on both.
Wow.
And I was
wow.
I'm like the Forrest Gump.
Wow.
I just appear.
Wow.
So yeah, I actually was this one. I actually. Let the FBI in for this last one.
You know, I got a lot of questions because I would wonder for you to be in this role. You know, it has to be, and I'm just saying as a human mm-hmm. being, you would have to be like, wow, this is really happening. Like this stuff, like this level of deception, this level of fraud, this level of, I mean, how do you maintain a confidence? In political leadership, considering that you're seeing these things, you're like, this is really happening.
Yeah.
That's a big question, Ms. Isabel. I know.
Well, I actually...
Welcome to the show.
I love the show. I have to bring you back. I actually was a white... for the state prosecutor, my very first job, well, I actually worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office as a law clerk. And I was actually one of the first students they ever hired from UB, and I kept applying. I applied 3 years for a free job, and never got it. Finally, the third year, they had a bank case, and they needed some help, so I got picked for it. And then I worked for the Maryland State Prosecutor's Office, and my first place was Jackie McLean.
Hmm.
So that was a fascinating case if you go back in time. I mean, it involved council people, it involved blah, you know, the comptroller. It was a conflict of interest. It was a fictitious employee. And she lost her job, obviously, because of that. But we were doing elected officials. So, you know, a sheriff in Garrett County, all types of cases. So I've been investigating politicians most of my life. but I absolutely believe in the democratic process. More importantly, I believe in the people. I believe there are incredibly good people that work in Baltimore City, and there are incredibly good people that live in Baltimore City. And I think there's a few bad apples here and there,
mm-hmm.
but I'll never give up. Because
and you're still hopeful.
I am very hopeful. I believe in our city.
Wow.
And we're
there, it is. There it is. Let's go to the phone lines, hear what you have to say. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Gerard in Baltimore, then Carlos out of Park Heights. Gerard, what's your question for our Inspector General?
Good evening. First, I'd like to thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And my question is, I'm a Baltimore City employee, and I've had some issues with the Department of Public Works, and oftentimes the issues that I've had regarding management, as I go through the chain of command to try to get issues resolved, whether it be the supervisor, the superintendent, the chief, the union, AFSCME, or the labor commission, a lot of these things have to be done in a timely manner, but oftentimes it appears as though the issues that I bring to them in reference to payroll issues, mistreatment, retaliation, things like that, that they get dragged out.
Mm.
And recently, the issues that I had, I sent to your office. I sent it to an issue that I was having. I sent to your office to a Mr. Kevin Logan in May, and he kind of never kind of addressed the issue. He forwarded to a Deputy Commissioner Brooks. And once again, this is February of 2020, and I sent the information over in May. And I still haven't gotten any response from anyone, but I've gone through the chain of command, and oftentimes employees are facing this problem as a result of management either brushing this stuff under the rug, or that by the time it gets to the necessary parties, it hasn't reached them in the time, you know, how they say things have to be processed within 10 days
of
this and 30 days of that. So my question would be, what am I to do when I keep call myself going through the chain of command, but yet no one is ever responding to these requests, and employees are facing this every day.
Gerard, thank you so much for checking in. And Ms. Isabel, what's the best, you know, course of action that Gerard should take?
Well, first, we have some ongoing investigations that I can't discuss. And I think sometimes it's hard to know how long certain things take. I'd be happy if you would reach out to me like on Monday and Tuesday, and I can actually research your particular issue and we can talk about it.
What's the best number?
Well, hey, you can just send me an email because I'm sure you I don't want you to get lost. I don't even know my own number.
we'll make sure we're going to get you that number and give you the best way.
I mean, I have the OIG number, but yeah. I don't want you to get lost.
You want to talk to you
know, isabel.cumming@baltimorecity.gov.
There it is.
I mean, that you can reach out to me, and then I'll reach out to you, okay?
Fantastic. LaVon, checking in from Baltimore. LaVon, what's your question or your comment? LaVon?
Hear me?
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Now we can hear you.
Yep.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, thanks for taking my call, and hello to your guest, Inspector. I wanted to find out whether or not that a lot of times misinformation is given out about our fine city, different departments, especially the City of Baltimore's educational program. You know, there's a lot of misinformation about missing money, bad audits, da-da-da-da. Is there a newsletter that kind of, do you have a newsletter that puts out maybe what you've done, what's in the pipeline, where we're going to correct some other areas of misinformation, specifically the Baltimore public school system? Do you have any information like that?
We do have information that we put out in our annual report. And if you're on Facebook, you can see it looks like this. And if you actually go to baltimorecity.gov, you can actually read the entire report. That lays out, you know, how many hotline calls we get, how much money we've saved. Like, just for this year, for fiscal year 2019, 2020, we've saved $1.2 million. And the year's only half. You know, as a compared to before I came, I think it was 400,000.
Mm.
And we now get 70 hotline complaints a month as opposed to 70 a year.
Mm.
So, but the school system, though, is we actually are working on a memorandum of understanding with them to work on the fraud cases, because the school system is actually very unique. It's the same as the police department. They're actually state organizations. And so in order to work with them, we have to develop what they call a memorandum of understanding, and we have been working on that. And so we will work with the school system on cases, but believe it or not, the new Kerwin report, they're establishing a statewide inspector general just for education. But I say that, but it has not been formed yet.
Wow. Well, LaVon,
it needs to be.
Yeah, absolutely. LaVon, thank you so much for checking
thank
in.
Thank you.
Ms. Isabel, how major or how big or how serious, rather, is fraud in financial waste in Baltimore City from your vantage point, from your years of doing this work?
I think it's really very big. A lot of it might not reach fraud, but there's a tremendous amount of waste. There's a tremendous amount of waste. We're doing things inefficiently. There's also some people that take advantage of the system, like, you know, a supervisor will be gone. They'll put in for, we had one person put in for like 80 hours of overtime in a 2-week time period. So that type of thing does definitely exist. But usually there's people, other people that know what's going on. So if they can let us know, like one person, it was driving her insane because someone she was working with was just watching porn all day long. Sure enough, we did a quick investigation. In a one-month time period, there was 4,000 images downloaded. On his city computer.
Wow.
He's no longer here.
Well, I hope not. But, I mean, when we think about the overtime costs in terms of the police department, like the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then probably even in the millions, I mean, I'm assuming. But, you know, it seems like there was a huge number.
There's a huge number. And it actually is being looked into. It's being evaluated. It's the way they have their union and their overtime and what they're able to do.
Yes, ma'am.
Sometimes the way they're set up, it's not always, if someone's watching from the outside, they're like, how can you do that?
Yeah.
And they absolutely can. So what may seem like, you know, that looks like complete fraud, Isabel, turns out that's within their union contract.
And that
makes it hard.
I can definitely imagine. Is your work compared to ethics? Like I know they talked to you about establishing like an ethics committee or an ethics commission.
There's actually a group that does ethics right now. The person in charge is a guy named Avery Eisenstark, him and Tony DeFranco, and they are just part-time because their real job is doing legislative services, which is they're doing all the bills for the city, which is tremendous.
Gotcha.
Okay, but then they're doing ethics too, and so the bill that was brought forward was to move the entire ethics thing over to the OIG so it will become independent.
Gotcha.
However, that's still in the process. I did testify, but I said that right now, I mean, I have 20 pending investigations right now of good investigations, okay, that we can't get to. And all my people have over 5 investigations going at one time. So I won't take on ethics unless I know I can do it right.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to set myself or my office up for failure. So I'll be happy to take on ethics as long as we're given the proper ability and people to do it.
We got like 15 seconds, Ms. Isabel.
We do have to come back.
What is the key thing that you want citizens of Baltimore to know about the work you're doing?
I just want the citizens of Baltimore, if you see something that truly bothers you, I want you to know that our hotline exists. I want you to feel free to reach out. Our hotline number is, can you read that out?
443-984-3476. Again, that's 443-984-3476. Ms. Isabel?
Oh, it's been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
I thank you.
The Baltimore City's Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Isabel Mercedes Cumming, thank you so much for being on For the Culture this evening.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we got to take a quick pause when we come back. Whole lot more. Stay riding with me. It's For the Culture on WEAA.